This podcast is brought to you by Dino De Lucy Studios, an entertainment production company.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stephen Lee Cotter, and I'm a producer with Dino De Lucy Studios. We're here today for a roundtable post-production of Desert City Diva, and we're here with the writers, producers, directors, and cast. And I'm going to let them discuss exactly how their careers came to this point, and what are they going to do about it. So, in any case, I'm going to hand it over to Corey Lynn Feynman, the writer of Desert City Diva. And as rumor has it, he himself is Raleigh Waters. We're going to let him explain what he was doing writing this novel. So, Corey, what can you tell us?
Again, this is Corey Lynn Feynman. I'm the author of Desert City Diva, which originally was in novel book form, and it was the third novel in my Raleigh Waters mystery series, which involves a private detective who is also a guitar player. And that really came out of my years playing music. As I tell people, I was not a guitar player. I was a keyboard player. So Raleigh Waters as a guitar player is kind of my revenge on guitar players, because I always sat in the back as the keyboard player and the guitar players were out front. So that's kind of where it came from. And then Desert City Diva actually came out of a trip that my wife and I took to the desert, where we came across quite accidentally a real place called Slab City, where it's a what we would definitely call an off-the-grid community, where all sorts of people are living out in the desert without electricity, though they make find their own electricity. Without water, they find their own water, and they live there all year. And one of the things they do have at Slab City that really grabbed my interest as far as the book is concerned is the stage where they have jam sessions every weekend. And once I saw that, I knew that I had to get Raleigh Waters out to Slab City somehow so he could play his guitar there. And that's really where the idea for Slab City got started. And I guess that's the best description of it. And then my wife, Maria Carrera, is also working on the podcast production of this. So she came along with me. So she knows a lot about the history of the book and the podcast especially. So I'll let someone else take it over from here.
Maria, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, I actually met Corey at the Old Globe Theater, which I think is a common denominator for all of us. Mm-hmm. We have all worked the Globe, and it's how I met Kevin and Kirsten as well. So we met back in 1982.
Don't tell people.
A long, long time ago. And when Corey decided he was going to, well, we worked together in various capacities at the Globe. One, I was a stage manager there, and he was a sound designer. So we had worked together before, and when we went off to the desert and saw Slab City, I was sort of in on the first glimmers of what that might turn into, though I didn't know. He let me be an early reader of the work, and give my suggestions and whatnot. So I felt like I had a feel for the story from the beginning. And so when it came time that he started talking about podcasting, it seemed like we might be able to work together on this and make it work. And
actually, Maria did the first work in terms of adapting the book into a pod play. What do we call them?
Oh, like a radio play?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Radio
yeah.
Play. Well, yes, he was working on his next project by then, so I got the job of trying to structure out something that might work translating the book into a podcast form, and looking at what episodes would be and how to break that down. And one of the first things I noticed was, gee, I think we're going to have to lose a number of characters in order to make this work. So if there was one thing I was a little nervous about wrecking my husband's work, it was losing all these characters. So I wrote out my reasoning. I wrote out the structure. I handed it to him with a list of, and I think we should lose these characters and why I thought we should. And I gave it to him.
It was painful at first, but I recovered and decided that she was 90% right on the changes and the people we needed to get rid of.
Well, he looked it over, and then my impression of it was that you looked it over and then said, yes, and we're also going to have to lose X, X, and X.
Right. It helped me get started, really, on rethinking the whole thing. And it's not a different story than the book, but there are a lot of differences, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And Kevin, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'll make it quick. I am an actor, and I went to graduate school at the Old Globe, where I met Maria, and post-school, she and Corey said that they were doing this adaptation podcast project, and it sounded really interesting, so I just said, let me know when it happens, and I would love to do that kind of thing. So,
Kevin was great. He was actually the first person on board for this. Before we had talked about casting or anything, I was up at an event, and there was Kevin, and I just saw him, and I just said, Kevin. Of course.
There's your Raleigh water.
Without consulting Corey, I talked to Kevin. Went home, told Corey, he said, that's a great idea. So Kevin was really the first onboard. And Kevin, of course, said, you know, I've got this wife. I'm really good at this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say in the arts, it's who you know that helps you get jobs. It helps when you're married to them.
So we end up having two married couples.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, what's that like, working with your husband?
Well, I'm never 90% right, so it's always quite a bit less than that.
I don't know about that. Well.
So, Kirsten, what are you doing now with your career?
I'm doing lots of different things right now. I'm originally from Canada and then came to San Diego via Washington State and did my master's here in musical theater. So I am usually in the musical theater world. I've been performing a lot, but then in the last couple of years, I've sort of moved into music directing because music is sort of my number one love. So right now I'm on my fifth project of the year, music directing. So that's kind of what's happening now.
And you actually sang part of the music in this.
I guess, yeah. I haven't heard it yet.
It sounds great. Yeah, okay. Got to play that for you.
That's good. Yeah, so just sort of doing whatever, I think both of us, we can to just keep working in arts, you know.
Well, one of the great things that was so great to find you two, I mean, it was easy for Marie to find you. There you were. But, it allowed us to get some people who could do a lot of different characters and a lot of different voices. And for this, you know, starting out with a project like this with a fairly small budget, that was just a godsend to have you guys both able to do many different characters and many different styles.
It's fun to do.
What's that like for you? What do you like about it?
Well, just listening to it, I pointed to you while we listened to it, and I was like, "Is that you?" Because it's interesting, actually, how small certain changes can be to make it kind of seem like, "Wait, is that a different?" I think that must be a different person.
I know. I had a moment too because I think I read a little bit of Dottie at the end, and I was like, "Wait a minute." I think that's me.
Yeah.
Even I had trouble.
Right. But you're not really doing much difference.
Right, right.
But for some reason, I guess,
because
you're not.
And
with
pace
all those editing things.
I think it's fun to be able to do different voices because I think when we are in this career, the more, you know, when we get to do different things, it's a lot more interesting for us. And to be able to do different things in one project alone is, feeds my artistic soul.
There's a lot of people just wanting you to be, what's the word everybody uses now? Be just like yourself. You know, everybody, it's like, they're just looking for like the truth of yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. So doing things like this is like, you get back into like the pretending thing.
Right.
You're just like pretending and.
Yeah, it's fun.
And there's no pressure to not mess up.
Yeah. We have a 4-year-old daughter who pretends constantly, and we hear so many different voices from her, and as you get older, you don't get to do that. So being able to do this project. And it's also fun, too, because I get, and we all do, I think, in theater and in music, too, I think sometimes get sort of roped into put in a box mm-hmm. based on your appearance, mm-hmm. you know. And so I, you know, because of my Scandinavian heritage, get put into this, like, ingenue box. And so now doing something where people can't see me, it's nice to, I don't know, be able to use my voice and not my appearance, if that makes sense.
I think it's worth noting that neither Kevin nor Kirsten looks like your descriptions in the book.
No. Especially if some of the people they're playing, some they're closer to than others. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Kevin is, you know, a little closer to Raleigh than some of the other folks.
Yes.
But still, yeah, very different people mm-hmm. than the characters. And that's fun, too. And hearing voices when you guys come in with voices, for the different characters, it's really fun for me. You know, sometimes I have a semi-idea of what a voice will be for a character, but mm-hmm. suddenly there's a new one, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's what they should sound like. Mm. Yeah.
And part of the wonderful thing that maybe comes from your musicianship is how easily you're able to grasp and switch, really grasping the rhythm and the colors of a character and then changing that up and always finding, I mean, never being satisfied with something that isn't very full in sound. Mm-hmm. And that's just really priceless for this kind of work.
Yeah.
I don't think I do always say, but I think that it's the truth, that I do think a lot of that comes from, like, good writing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I've been asked sometimes in, like, a play or something where it's like, where did that voice come from? And you're like, it just, you read it and that's just what it sounds
there.
Like.
Yeah.
That's just what I think they think it sounds like.
Yeah.
Rather than any ingenuity on my part, you know.
I think that too. I think, and that helps us with the different characters too, because you can, just by reading it, you can feel the different pacing and you can kind of hear the different voice just because of how it's written, the cadence and how it's written. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I agree with you.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm going to change the subject a little bit here, because as we've been talking, I've been thinking about and I'm sure some of the people that listen to the podcast will wonder a little bit about, you know, is any of this true? Is any of this based on anything? I always start books with some real story, something like that. Of course, this one started with Slab City, but then I brought in this weird alien UFO cult. Mm-hmm. And there is in San Diego, there is this very weird UFO cult called the Unarians. They have not committed any kind of mass suicide. They seem to be very fairly pleasant people overall. but they're really into this weird planetary kind of thing. And playing with that is kind of fun. And I've had a few people reading my books go, wow, there's some weird stuff in here. But it's all based on reality. I wondered how you guys, reading it, reacted to that, because sometimes it's fun to have that weird stuff to play with.
Yeah.
You know, it's more fun to play than just regular folks sometimes. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that when you were first reading it or first thinking about it.
It definitely, to me, takes on that kind of detective-y tone. So I don't know if I was thinking about it in, oh, this must be some real thing type of
way. That part's
way.
More traditional, the private eye voice.
But I also think I might be slightly one of those weird people who sometimes is like, I don't know, man. Maybe the aliens just did that. I don't know. Like, who am I
to say
you do you, you know?
I'm learning things about my husband. I think it's fun when I was, because I got to read a little bit of Dottie, and I think that's when you get to really feel that interesting character and. I don't know. I think it's just really fun to read something and then think, like, there are people who, you know, who this is what they believe. And it's kind of fun to pretend to be those people.
Kind of ratchets it up to another, like a whole nother level, too. You know, it's like it would be one type of story if it was all like Planet Earth, just like regular,
right?
Yeah. Like this is a Law and Order type of case. We're trying to figure this out. What are the clues? But that kind of takes to like, you're just always wondering, where is this going to go? Like, is this going to take a turn that I really didn't see? Or, you know, like that. That's kind of what's interesting in the back of my mind is like, are there going to be aliens? Is it hinting at me? Because you're always trying to figure it out.
When are they going
to
show up? You know? Yeah,
exactly.
When do we get the little doo 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 doo?
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering, actually, if you guys had, I guess, kind of you, Maria, since you did most of the adapting, if you had, there had been things, because we listen to a lot of podcasts, or if you guys had listened to a bunch of podcasts and that's what made you think we should do this, or if you had never really heard one and just thought we should make this a radio play.
I've never heard a podcast. I still, to this day, I'm such a Luddite.
Don't start because you will not stop. Yeah. You're obsessed.
However, I did listen to radio plays.
Yeah.
I used to enjoy going back and listening to the old radio plays from the 40s and 50s and 30s. I don't know how far back they go.
30s,
I remember that we had a radio when I was a long time ago. And we used to tune into The Shadow, and we used to tune into The Lone Ranger. And, you know, that was the kind of stories I remember being done. And so when I looked up a little, I did a little research on what to do with a podcast. And it really sounded a lot like the old radio plays to me.
And you'd had some playwriting experience.
Had some playwriting
before,
experience.
And adapting for the
stage. I'd done some adapting
stage.
Before adapting for the stage, yes. And so the idea about structure and what works, also through years of being in production work, sort of those are my guideposts. How does this beat work? Where do we end this?
Yeah.
Right.
What do we need to make? You know, how do we cut to the action?
Yeah.
So I can't say, I mean, I'm happy if it comes out well on a podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it will. Like, we've been listening to them for a long time, and they're, I think, like 80% are kind of like this.
Right.
So it's like
people talking to each other,
interviewing, and then another portion are like true crime stories, which are a little bit closer to this, but you don't have a lot that are, you know, fiction based. And if you do, it's just like a book on tape type of thing with someone reading. And the little editing stuff, you know, Stephen, that you like with the on the production side, it really just kind of makes it so much more.
Allows for the imagination to really kick in.
Yeah.
So which I think we lack a lot of that.
I was just wondering, because I think it's ironic. Like, I think that, like, this is actually, like, on the style of it is on, like, a forefront of what us, like, enormous consumers are kind of ready to listen to a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
really?
We've heard so much of the other thing. You're kind of like, I don't want to listen to my interviews right now. I want something else.
Yeah. I don't want to listen to two guys talking.
It's
retro now. Totally. Yeah. And some of the true crime type of stuff, it's like, I don't want to, it's real. I don't want to, I'm not in a dour mood. Like, I want to be excited, but, so it's interesting.
Great. It'll be interesting
to
see.
Yeah. To some podcasts.
So Corey, if some of these are based on real life incidences and clearly Raleigh identifies with you, Macy must be Maria. I don't know.
Wow. No, Macy is definitely not Maria.
I thought they were very similar.
Yeah.
So similar.
Yeah, perhaps if Maria were growing up as an 18-year-old right now in this day and age, maybe, but I still doubt it. Yeah. Yeah, I still don't see it happening. I have to admit, a lot of my characters, I know where they came from in this particular one. You know, the Norwood character, who appears in more than one book, is based on a guitar-playing friend of mine who did kind of have his own shop for a while. This police detective, the policeman in this one, I actually got rid of one that was based on someone I knew, but she has some of the same things. Macy, I don't know where she came from.
Maybe she's your fantasy.
Maybe. I don't, she sounds like a lot of trouble for a fantasy. But it was fun to put. What I liked about writing her was I just liked having her be just this pushy thing, this entity that just like she's always pushing along, and that's good, and that's actually a good alternative to Rodney Crowley, because he's laid back, you know, and he's kind of like, okay, let's check this out, and she's like, no, go,
yeah,
and I think that's what works about the book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do people pick up on that? Or have you told them, I'm writing this book, I'm basing this person off of you, or have they read it without you telling them?
I don't think anyone that I've based a character off of knows it yet. Possibly the mother, Judith.
Now.
Yeah, possibly the mother, Judith. My mother might have had a couple of interesting little, you know, comments on that.
Uh-huh.
Though I think of Judith as a combination of my mother and Maria's mother in some kind of mashup there. So it was never one person. And you always change them enough.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Huh.
On another note, where did all this great music come from?
Ah, well, I'm glad to know it's great. I was a musician for many years, and I hadn't written any music in quite a while, and I decided, let's see what I can come up with for the a theme for Raleigh. And I got together with GarageBand on my computer and played around for a while, and suddenly I had something that started sounding right. And then also for the real guitar that's in it, I got together with a former a guitar player who used to be in my band, a great guitar player named Ian Vate, and he listened to the theme, and then we mapped out how to work with that and come up with some other stuff. So he did some great interpretations of it. You know, he's got an acoustic interpretation of it. He's got a full-on blues band interpretation. So it was really cool to have him take part.
And in one of the pieces, you actually merged Kirsten's voice.
Yeah, and that was kind of a lucky little thing when we were recording, and everybody was here, and Kirsten was on the mic. You played the theme, and she heard it and started humming along, and then you recorded it. And then, fortunately, you were able to give me that little piece of music, and I was able to kind of slot it right into the background of the other stuff. And it sounds great. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of subterfuge that was going on during this whole podcasting thing.
Yeah, when you hear something good, you know, try to grab it, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
People have the ability to improvise and then get their work put into an integral part of the thing.
And that was a great thing about having, actors who also do musical work, you know. You guys were kind of in tune with that side of things.
My improv teacher from undergrad in the jazz class I took would be very surprised that I successfully improvised anything. That was not my strong suit back in school.
Take that, teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at me now.
All right. Well, I think that's great. Do you guys have fun doing this podcast?
So much fun.
Absolutely. It's been really interesting and fun for me to kind of have the production, to hear it from actors, to have it in another form. It's all been quite interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had a great time.
Yeah. Hopefully you do a fourth book or go back and do backwards and do one and two.
Yeah. Well, I have a fourth book at home on the, on the computer, so we're going to get that one out fairly soon. And then, we can go back to at least one of the previous books and probably do it.
Probably
nice production.
You two do all the roles, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We're in. That's fine with us.
Sounds good.
All right, well, we at Dino DeLucci Studios are delighted that you were able to do this with us, and we just had a blast. And I hope that it doesn't damage your careers too badly.
I don't think that's possible.
But we want to thank you, and hopefully we can do something again in the future.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Well done.
This podcast has been brought to you by Dino DeLucci Studios, an entertainment production company.